What is up, listeners? It's Theo.
And it's Jim here. We are two product people who have spent most of our careers working in education technology, and we love this space.
We are trying something new with Learn Public, aren't we?
That's right. There's a couple things we want to try that's new.
So first of all, I think as we think about our journey with Learn Public, we did last year four different episodes. We did an episode on Varsity Tutors. We did an episode on Coursera. We did an episode of Duolingo. And then we did a really fun episode with Vic about LearnDeck. As we look forward to 2022, we'd like to change the format a little bit.
Well, I think Theo and I, it comes back to why we're doing this together. Just like the name Learn in Public suggests, we're doing this so that we can learn in public together. So learning for us comes really, really highly, number one. And also we have day jobs that we really actually really like. So this occupies as a side project for us. And that means that this needs to be fun. So those are the two primary things, two primary things is that we need to have fun and we need to be learning. And I think we did a lot of that last year. There was just so much pre-work we had to do.
Yeah.
That our cadence of production wasn't quite regular and we weren't quite getting to do the stuff that felt really, really creative and fun for us, which is look at new ideas, look at new companies, talk about new concepts. And we were stuck a lot in kind of the production phase, which is also really fun and important. But yeah, we like to try cadence that can get us more consistent, explore new ideas more regularly. And so that's one of the first things we'll try is a more consistent posting schedule that should vary, maybe weekly to bi-weekly is what we're aiming for this year.
Yeah, it's a good goal. Consistency is really important. I think one other thing was that we are generally very excited about things that kind of transcends education in the conventional sense. 2021 was a pretty big year for us, where we had a lot of different learning experiences that inspired us outside of the traditional realm.
Yeah.
It's like, we did not, like a lot of the things that you and I talked about that were profound for us didn't come from Coursera. It didn't come from online course, but some of them came from online courses, but I think we were also pleasantly surprised by how much came offline.
Yeah.
It came from different modes that didn't seem like traditional learning learning in a traditional sense.
Sure. Sure, that's right. In fact, when Theo and I just did our reflections on 2021, we realized that our personally most meaningful experiences, none of them came from these excellent companies that we had taught. They might have come in the process of working to talk about them. Some of them didn't come from products or companies at all. So that marks the second change that we like to try this year, starting off this year at least, is we love to expand our horizon of what we discuss here to be more generally about learning and less strictly about ed tech. We'll give you some reflections in our year from the last year, and you'll hear a couple of experiences that are not kind of from privatized Silicon Valley companies at all.
Totally.
So we're hoping that talking about these concepts, talking about these experiences, they will inform how we think about our own learning. They will inform how we think about how to create better learning experiences for students of all ages. And hopefully they also give you some inspiration as well as you're thinking about your own learning journey and whether it's in ed tech or not.
Yeah. And I think this podcast, this shift in the format is us also not knowing exactly what this podcast will be about. But by recording this, I think Jim and I have a lot of really fun conversations where it's very exploratory, and we hope to record a lot of those sessions so that you are part of the process with us as we begin our learning journey on figuring out what this podcast ultimately evolves.
Yep.
So it's still learning in public, but a different kind of learning in public.
Mm-hmm. So to recap, starting off the year, we're going to try a more consistent posting schedule, weekly or bi-weekly, which will likely mean shorter form content. And we're also going to cover a broader range of learning related experiences outside of traditionally defined education technology. Two things to start, probably more things coming this year that we'll try out. So thanks for being on this journey with us, and we'll give it a shot.
All right, let's segue into reflections for the past year. What kicks off?
So Theo, actually, I had mentioned earlier that when Theo and I chatted about our previous year and reflected on our most powerful learning experiences, none of them were really from the companies, the awesome companies that we covered, despite how powerful the learning experiences they create are. And one of mine that I had brought up is actually from attending the Van Gogh immersive. So for those that don't know, this is like an interactive art exhibit that is put out by this private production company, I think out of Toronto, out of Canada. Their story is pretty fascinating. I think they started more than 5 years ago. They have an event production background. I think they did music and concerts largely before that, but maybe some also visual stuff. And they picked Van Gogh as an artist to exhibit because his work is in the public domain. So you actually pay licensing. And the overall concept is, instead of a more traditional kind of flat way to present art, like in a museum, where you go in, everything is quiet, you use perhaps one sense only, just your eyes to navigate this museum. You look at pieces of work that you try to understand through small text right underneath this work of art.
Right.
And then you move on. And maybe if you're lucky enough, you get a tour to get the context of the artist. This kind of flips on its head, where one big thing they do is they engage all of your senses. So think like flowing classical music. There was some Debussy playing to match kind of the tone, the impressionist tone of it. There is also a lot of 3D elements in there. They had a really impressive bust Van Gogh that was 3D, and they had actually casted light over that 3D bust of his face that was animated. So it looked like his face was moving off of the light that was casted on top. And I think the other thing I noticed is just way more storytelling about the artists. They had mini documentaries produced themselves that was telling his life leading up to mental illness through it. And they had this entire kind of warehouse room at the very end in which they had produced kind of a 3D room entirely around you, in which they were casting scenes from his life in chronological order, told through pieces of this art. So I know this all sounds very abstract because we're talking about a very visual medium through an audio format, but just imagine that, like, the way you interact with an artist isn't just by looking at their work, but is way more through the artist's life story. It's through the audio format of listening. It's through a 3D and not just a 2D flat around their art, but 3D of their face and of different scenes from their life. Of course, since we're getting closest to the metaverse, there was a VR component as well, in which we got to put on VR goggles. We got to navigate through a town that he lived in. And this had really struck me at the time. One, because I think I had come to love Van Gogh right before attending. I had, learned a lot about him. And I feel like this did a lot of justice to his life and his work. So as an art appreciator, very amateur level, I'd appreciated what they had done. But on another level, on a level about learning, I thought this was a completely transformative way to do modern arts education. I put myself in the shoes of younger children, many of whom were there with their families. And I think, wow, this is just such a better way to build a budding interest in art, to engage with, artists long dead from centuries ago, that I have to imagine in a traditional museum setting might feel kind of esoteric, out of reach, a little bit flat. This really brings them to life. And this really kind of, through a more digital language, talks the language of the next generation to make art way more relevant to them. So I have felt that, but I'm like generally more excited about something like this experience for the younger generation as well as an onboarding Van Gogh into other artists. I know this company is far from done. I think they're doing Frida Kahlo next because her work is also in the public domain, and they have probably a couple more lined up. I'm excited to see what they do, but I'm also excited to see like what general digital technology does for our interaction with different topics of learning, like art, which is traditionally long neglected, I think, by the technology industry.
So three questions. One, where was this? Two, how did you find out about it? And three, what were some things about Van Gogh's life that you learned about? What were some takeaways from that experience?
Yeah. So what it was, we saw the one in DC, but like good business people, after initial success, this company has scaled it out pretty well. So I think they're in, at least they're in New York. I saw ads for it in San Francisco or LA as well. So I think they're in cities around the world. I want to say like probably under 10,
okay,
but probably more than five. So you can take a look online and you can see if it's in someone near you. And how do we discover it? So, this is actually a really interesting story. So two sources, actually. Dawn had heard about, my wife had heard about it when we were in New York at the time from a friend. So this is appealing to kind of the millennial generation, and her friend had a good experience and actually told her about it in person. And on top, my mom, who is in her late 50s, she had heard about it on a Chinese messaging platform called WeChat from one of her friends. So I think that speaks to how broadly appealing this experience is. It's getting a millennial. There were a lot of Gen Z folks there. And also this is hitting my mom's generation too. And there's something here for everyone. So that was pretty interesting that I think back.
Cool.
What's a story about Van Gogh that really struck me? There are, you know, scenes in which the way that Van Gogh uses light, for instance, if you look at his work, it is somewhat surreal. He bends light in a way that doesn't quite match your natural perception of it. There are like orange and yellow tones in this painting he does of a cafe that are way more accentuated than what your eyes actually perceive. And there are other tones that he mutes. And I think the conjecture is that he literally saw colors differently at different periods of his life, that, you know, his like severe pain at the time might have altered how he sees his light,
right?
And also like how he's processing the world at this time mentally might have changed how he saw all this light. And they did a really good job of capturing that, but actually showing you the natural light at night of this cafe that he had painted, what it would have looked like in VR.
Right.
And the colors that he ended up actually choosing and what the painting looked like. So there was the scene that he had captured, but he did such radical alterations to it that really made it special, that really made it his own, that now if you follow Van Gogh, you can just look at it and be like, oh, that's a Van Gogh. There's something there in the way he changed colors.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Wow, I got to check it out. Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about it when I was in New York. Dan and I just never got a chance to go. But yeah, it sounds compelling that I should check it out. When I reflect on my 2021, it was a year of a lot of traveling. I was a digital nomad, one could call it, for pretty much the entire year. I was in Hawaii for 3 months, New York for 2 months, and a bunch of random places for like 2 or 3 weeks at a time. One of the things that I found really fun and appealing in 2021 was doing a lot of audio tours and driving tours when I was traveling. So Dana and I, when we were in Maui, we did the road to Hana. And the driving tour was just made us appreciate the whole drive to Hana. Just made us appreciate it a lot more. They would dive into the rich history of Hawaii, which was a very, very, very sad history of Americans kind of just taking over Hawaii and was just like, nope, this is our land. And did some pretty messed up stuff. But
it was America, but that sounds completely unfamiliar.
Yeah, I know. It was okay. Anyways, not to make this about Americans brutalizing Hawaiians, but I just really appreciate that experience where it's like, you know, when you're driving, you probably wouldn't notice things left and right of you. But when there's an audio format saying like, hey, on the left, this battle happened, you're just kind of like, holy crap. You want to embrace every moment a lot more.
Yeah.
And we did that also we did another audio tour in Boston. We did one on the Salem Witch Trials. And we went through this.
It's cool.
Graveyard, and they would walk you through like what happened to this person fucked over this person.
Wow.
And like and told you all the drama. Mm. But like, if it weren't for that, we would just walk past that graveyard. Mm. Like, oh, cool. There's a graveyard.
Mm.
So it makes everyday experiences so much more rich with history and immersive. Did that in the drive in Vermont too. So overall, like, those were really great experiences because they like provided a lot of color to a lot of things you were really seeing in life.
Yeah. And did you use the same audio tour provider throughout these, or did you just pick whatever was available and it came out from different companies?
It's a pretty disaggregated space.
Yeah.
And I, like, it's kind of all over the place. There's a buddy and I who did one, he and I did one at an audio tour in Vermont.
We're
kind of thinking like there needs to be like an Airbnb for these experiences.
Yeah. Where it's more aggregated.
Yeah. Because I think there's a lot of potential for people, or there's a lot of excitement for these audio tours, but it is kind of like all over the place. You kind of have to Google it. You have to search the app store, like Vermont tours.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very difficult to find one consistently.
Yeah. Similar experiences when I was traveling abroad in, you know, kind of international landmarks. I remember being to the Taj Mahal a few years ago. There was also an audio tour there. And I guess let's talk about that. So what do you think is a learning outcome that you realize from these audio tours? Like how did your life and how did you see these places change? You hinted on it, but I'd love for you to summarize that.
There's something around immersion. Like if you told me a history fact of, let's say, the War of 1812, it doesn't mean that much.
Yeah.
But if you told me like right now, where you're standing, some Andrew Jackson, I don't even know if this is the right war, but Andrew Jackson stabbed this person. And you're just like, and that changed the entire course of the war.
Yes.
That means a lot more to me, as opposed to me reading it in a textbook. And I feel like there's an underlying thing between the Van Goghs that you're talking about too, where like learning about Van Gogh makes a lot more sense when you're immersed in the actual environment. You can actually see a lot of things that you see. I think there's something similar.
Yeah. Mark Zuckerberg, when he was introducing the new Meta, he was talking about how in the metaverse, embodiment and presence is this thing that is special to offline experiences that Meta is now working to bring online. And it's somewhat of a fuzzy concept, but I think it's related to what you're talking about, which is that it's this feeling of being there in person.
Yeah.
And that has all kinds of cascading effects. Like when you're there in person, you're more focused because you feel like another person is there right next to you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look around you, things feel real. I think that level of presence sounds like it's greatly amplified by understanding the context of where you're present.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're describing. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe everyone can relate to experiences in which you go somewhere really incredible, really beautiful. You go to a new city, you go to a new country, you step off and your mental processes are stuck right where you left off. Maybe you're thinking about work. Maybe you're recontextualizing this new space, or like, oh, these streets kind of remind me of San Francisco, or like, you know, like, oh, that cafe, I feel like I kind of seen something like that before.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, oh, great, I can get a chocolate croissant here the same way I can get at home. Certainly, like, I've had these experiences of kind of conventionalized thinking and non-presence in incredible places.
Yeah.
And I think what shocks you out of these and puts you in a state of appreciation and feeling of presence is exactly what you're describing, which is context.
Right.
And context can be achieved through knowledge, which is that I know there's something specific about this place around me that gives me a sense of connection, such that I feel at a visceral level my sense of presence here as something that's really important, as something that's profound. Otherwise, I think we're both privileged to be like relatively well-traveled people, I guess. Haven't been to that many places, but that's the risk of, I think, traveling is you show up somewhere, you kind of walk around, take in the sights. You're like, oh, great. That's a monument.
Right.
That's that's the basilica. And then you just move on.
It lacks scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
So maybe for the road of Ada, what's a specific thing that you remember?
Oh man. I mean, I think the thing I remember the most about was the American, it's brutal, like it's like kind of very sad, but then how Americans took over Hawaii. And it was a story of just like kind of Americans just settling there,
yeah,
trade.
Yeah.
Then kind of like complaining and whining a little bit about like, we should have voting rights. And like, this is like
the Americans.
Yeah. The Americans were like, yeah, we trade here. We are citizens here. And like these, remember, it's, imagine just like showing up to a country, like showing up to like Australia, sure, and be like, I trade here.
Yeah.
I do business here. I should vote, even though I'm not part of your people. I don't consider myself an Australian. I consider myself an American.
Yep.
And then after them complaining about not voting, they made a big fuss about it. And the Americans was kind of like, okay, we should put more people in Hawaii. So like more people came to Hawaii. There was like a vote where like Americans ended up getting the right to vote.
Yeah.
Then Americans started to they voted to overthrow their,
yeah,
like their king or whatever.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of stories like that and brutal war after war.
Uh-huh.
To ultimately make Hawaii state up there.
Fascinating. By the way, we can have an entire side of conversation about how audio tours, I feel like it barely scratched the surface. There's like so many different product enhancements there that can happen, like way more GPS triggered cues, right?
Yeah.
So imagine an always on audio tour in which it serves you up the right thing and at where you are at your
speed. Yeah.
Different levels of personalization, like, hey, Theo likes to learn more about history.
Yes.
Jim likes to learn more about characters. David likes to learn more about food.
Right.
So how do we personalize what's happening here in a way that's most relevant for your interests?
Totally.
And yeah, I just think that there's just such big opportunities in this space for audio, because I think audio is a really powerful way to link online and offline together.
Right.
You can still be fully present in the offline world.
Right.
When you're online in audio. And this is an element of the metaverse people don't talk about enough. People, I think they believe that we're going to go straight online. I actually think that a lot of the opportunities in the intermediary are to kind of couple online and offline in much more compelling ways. And audio is a key link to get there.
No, let's talk about it. It was an idea that I was exploring of just like, I want, and it was coming from a selfish view, like I want more audio tours and I want to like have them more often,
yeah,
but it's a pain in the butt to find. And I think it's also one of the things that we were like looking at, which is like, I think it's just hard to create.
Yeah.
It's like if you're a creator, it's like, if you're a, let's say you're an audio tour creator, the content production is like really high. And the thing is audio tours are really like cheap too. And so I feel like there's a lot of opportunity in this space. I'm curious, like how,
yeah,
to get more people to be incentivized to create that kind of content.
Yeah.
And it could be like, you could imagine a world where you're taking snippets from like a podcast, for example,
sure,
like something that is kind of what you're talking about. Like, hey, you're on Siegert Street.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da happened, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting as a way of like almost auto creating some of these audio tours from existing,
right,
content.
Right.
Where if you can populate your content based on other stuff that's already been published about this area, you can select for that. Yeah. So your theory is bringing down kind of cost of production can help with just kind of coverage of the,
yeah,
tours. Yeah. That's a good one. I do think the economics of it are kind of tough, that audio tours kind of are seen as a pretty cheap and low quality product.
Right.
And instead, in a lot of these like popular foreign destinations, the premium product is a live guide,
yeah,
that can take you around. My experience with them has been, they're like extremely inconsistent.
Yeah.
But there's a language capacity and level. There's just their ability to tell stories. There's like,
right,
how you relate to them.
Right.
So I actually find that from experience perspective, audio tours are way more consistent.
Yeah. No, yeah.
And tour guides, you know, the premium solution are just, they often are not worth what we pay for them.
So, and you lack a lot of flexibility with tour guides.
Yes.
You can't go off.
That's
and
right.
Come back. And I think there's something about that audio tour that makes it such a flexible experience.
That's,
I think,
right,
that's what the audio format does. Very,
yeah,
flexible format. I think another thing too is like, how do you, like, if you told a random stranger, are you interested in doing an audio tour? I think the word audio tour together brings up very boring, arcane
like
vibes.
Museum.
Exactly.
Right?
And museum tours are not that great.
Yeah.
But these audio tours that I'm talking about are like, you're just like so engaged all the time.
Yeah.
And the storytelling is fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's like something about like the word audio tour. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it doesn't, like when I ask my friends, are they interested? They're like, fine. Like,
yeah,
do it.
Sure. But, and then they have a great experience.
Yes. Like, yeah. Well, so yeah, one of my friends was just kind of like, well, fuck it. We're going to be in the car. We don't have anything else to do. And he was just like, oh my God, I learned about the history of Vermont. I didn't know Vermont was the first to like abolish slavery. I didn't know Vermont was the first to have a women's college. You know, like, all these really cool facts that you would not have cared to look up. If you looked at these things independently of the experience, it wouldn't have meant anything.
You were just shrugged.
Yeah,
sure. And that's the great thing about it is you're saying there's like audio tours of Vermont. Probably these things apply to your local city.
Yeah.
Just where you live. You don't need to travel to have an appreciation for some of this.
Right.
So there's definitely something there. Maybe we'll put a pin in it for now. But with you, now we'll come back to it later.
Yeah. All right. That wraps up our episode here today. This Sunday on January 22nd, we will be 23rd.
Yeah, 23rd.
We will be hosting a Twitter Spaces with our friend Alberto on online learning communities.
If you don't come for us, come for Alberto. He is an incredible community builder in the education technology space, but he's also a very expansive thinker. So very much a kindred spirit to us in terms of being deeply interested in how people learn best and how we can all work on these problems together. So we're excited for you to meet him, and we will drop a link to the Twitter Spaces in the show notes. If you don't end up catching it, don't worry. We'll also put it up in our next week's episode.
All right. See y'all later.
Bye.